Little by little, you're starting to create an opening in my heart that closed and refused to part. Our first meeting was like any other that I had encountered, but soon I would discover that there was something different about her.
Welcome, everybody. This is Sharon Smith, and we are on Iambic Podcast, and I am here with a published poet who has a book out called Beautifully Broken Blue Butterflies. I like to see, to give you, Sojourner Jenny! Hi. How you doing? How you doing over there?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. Because, I mean, I was thinking like, well, maybe I can get her here, but no, no. She does work. And I'm like, no, she says she doesn't. Oh, dang it.
Anytime.
No, that's good. But no, welcome to the show and stuff. And
thank you.
I just want to know, how's everything been with the book and everything?
Things are good. I don't really know the optics of how it's selling until March.
Okay.
So right now it's just kind of, I know it's selling, but I don't know how much or.
Are you getting a real good roundabout figure of people coming around, giving you acclaims, giving you a little praise?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's nice.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so speaking of which, since you have written this poetry book and you basically are a published author.
Yeah.
What got you into poetry?
Well, I think being a loner.
Okay.
Got me into poetry.
That's a good reason to be a poet.
Well, I've been writing since I was 7.
Okay.
And I've always been like what you call a latchkey kid, kind of.
Oh, yes, and most definitely.
So I just created a world inside my world, and it came through in writing.
Okay.
And I started writing short stories, and it wasn't until I discovered a poetry book that my writing shifted. And that poetry book was by Edgar Allan Poe. Yeah, I just happened upon it, and I didn't know what any of it meant, but I could read it, but I didn't know, you know.
The Raven.
It was The Raven. Okay. That was the first one that I read, and I just, you know, it was deep, it was dark, it was tragic, it was beautiful, it was about love and loss, and, you know, I'm a kid, so I don't know about any of that stuff, but I just knew that something resonated with me. And so my mom let me keep it at first. She was like, that's kind of dark. It's like, I don't know. And I'm like, Mom, have you seen what you read? And she's it's like, touche kind of thing. So
touche. Novels.
Yes. But after that, it was probably around grade school that I actually had a teacher kind of introduced poetry to us.
Okay.
And, you know, taught us the basics and haikus and stuff. You know, it was just a couple of weeks worth of things. But that's when I really started to notice that my writing had shifted into more of a poetry format.
Okay.
And it went from there ever since. I never really, like, it never really dawned on me that I was writing poetry. It was just I knew that I liked doing it that way, and it just became a natural thing. And so I wrote, and no one ever told me that what I was writing was like poetry and what that meant, because I didn't tell anybody that I wrote. So, and I didn't tell anyone until I wrote this book.
Oh, okay.
So we're talking decades of writing and no one knew.
Hey.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
Well, that's how I got started.
Nice. So being that you basically got started, you have a BA in communications, but you also worked a lot in the theater. So how's that?
Yeah. I was a theater minor too.
So how is that pertail to yourself being, you know, do you consider yourself a poet or do you consider yourself still a theater kid, mostly still from all that singing and acting and stuff?
Well, I started doing theater and performing when I was 9, and I started professionally in college, and I kind of hung my hat up years ago. And it was because I, when I was a kid, you know, like I said, I've always been writing, but like, I felt like I was that little girl in a Selena movie, like looking up at the moon and the stars. And like, you know, I want to be a singer one day. You know, that was my ultimate thing. And but I got into acting and I loved it. And so I just thought that's what I was going to do. And then one day I realized like something was missing. And it wasn't that I didn't want to do it ever, but I felt like I needed to put it on pause because I felt like I was missing something. Like it wasn't my purpose in life. And once this book came to be, then everything, all the pieces started coming together, and now the theater and the writing have intertwined kind of into one for me.
Oh, okay.
So that might be why it seems like I'm pretty natural on stage.
Okay.
When I'm reading.
Huh. Yeah. So tell us, what is Beautifully Broken Blue Butterflies? What's the origin? What made the book?
Sure. So, like I said, I hadn't told anyone that I wrote, and I wasn't planning on ever telling anyone.
Tuesday.
So, I was in a long-term relationship. We were actually domestic partners, and this was March 16th. 2016, and her name is Toyana. She suddenly passed away with a brain aneurysm.
Okay.
So no one saw it coming, and it was like I was at work and I got a phone call, and then 6 days later it was over, and it was just my world had completely flipped upside down, and I was in a really dark place, and that's saying it lightly. I kind of felt like I got picked up and dropped off in the devil's forest in pitch black, and I had to find my way out, you know. So 2 years plus was pretty much a blur. But in between that time of this grieving, I was writing. And in the beginning, I don't even really remember writing. I mean, I remember that I wrote it, but it was just almost like I'd black out and I just needed it to get whatever was brewing inside of me out. Cause I didn't think I would ever pick up a pen again. I didn't want to write anymore. But it literally just happened. And next thing I know, years later, I had hundreds of pages, and I wrote one poem, the last poem that I wrote from the book called Blue Butterfly, and I read it, and I was just like, I'm done. And I didn't even know what that meant. I was like, I don't think I have any more to say, and I went back and read through everything, and it was like it was a book. So losing her, it created some kind of awakening within me in a way, and it made my writing it added more depth than I've ever really experienced before. So, that's how the book came to be under unfortunate circumstances, you know. it's just a really strange thing, because if all of this hadn't happened, I wouldn't have a book. People still wouldn't know that I wrote, I don't know. That's one of the things about losing someone. Your life changes forever, and you can go in several directions. And when you go into a positive direction, you're like, dang, why couldn't that have happened without a tragedy, But that's where I'm at. So I'm just kind of like, this is my purpose now. And I truly feel like that was the piece that was missing when I stopped doing theater. And I was like, something just doesn't feel right. I don't know what it is. I need to find out.
So here's a question. So did you stop theater when she died or before?
No, before.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was how long was the relationship?
5 years.
Wow. Mm. Wow. So yeah, she was her soulmate. Yeah. So speaking of the soulmate stuff, I know you have, like you said, you wrote most of them were prose, some poems, some thoughts in the book and stuff. I remember you had your first performance over at the wine bar, and you had a lot of them were deep poems, but also like thoughts, and that you're reading out. These are things I wanted to say to you when you were here, what I should have said. And
yeah, I'd say thoughts in a poetry form. I would call myself a poetic storyteller.
Nice.
I definitely feel like that is a true essence of my writing, is storytelling. Like I said, I started writing stories,
right.
But it morphed into poetry. So that's where I feel like the book goes. But I don't have too many short poems in there. They're pretty long.
Yes.
So each poem, I feel like, does kind of have a beginning, middle, and end to it. But it tells a story from the beginning to the end of falling in love and losing someone you love and trying to find out how to find hope in despair.
When you were writing this and stuff, were, like you said, mostly you weren't thinking of a book. You just had this moment of, I need to do something, and this was it. You just need to write. You need to write.
Yeah.
And I know that Jerry Seinfeld's already been pointing out when he does his comedian, when he's talking about comedians, all you got to do is write one joke a day. And then when the year is over, you have 365 jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, I wouldn't say you wrote one page a day, but were you writing something one day you're just writing, and did you come back to it and keep it writing, or was it more of just a ongoing frenzy? Just, I needed to finish till the thing was done.
No, I had no end game. I usually wrote when I was in extreme pain.
Okay.
It was my outlet. So it was usually just a stream of consciousness, or you can call automatic writing. It was just coming out of my head. But a lot of the poems, were dreams.
Oh, okay.
And, I'm a very vivid dreamer. So, and I remember everything. So I would wake up in the morning and I would just write it down, and then I would come back to it later, and then revise it. Not because I felt like someone was going to read it, but I would read it back later and just to see what I wrote and change some words or something that I felt like made more sense. So it's usually, if it wasn't from a dream, then it was just in the moment, and I was just antsy and maybe panicky, and I would just take out a piece of paper and a pen and just start writing. And then I would eventually transfer it to the computer. And then that's when I would kind of, when I felt up to it, edit it. But it wasn't every day. It was just when I felt like I was honestly like I was about to explode right. when it happened. So could have been every day. It could have been every other day. It could have been once a month. This was like 2.5 years of just that.
So basically you're writing, you started having a like a diary and just started just writing into a diary, or was it just documents of stuff into a folder, just a keepsake?
It was still poetry in my mind.
Okay.
I never really did diaries.
Okay.
So, you know, even as a kid, I didn't have diaries like that. I had journals,
Okay. But
they're in poetry form.
Good, yeah. That's good.
And for me also, it was my way of kind of hiding in case someone did find it. I learned how to kind of almost write cryptically.
Oh, okay.
Very vague. So it was, you would really have to read it like 100 times, like kind of understand where is she going with this? Because I was afraid someone's going to find it. And I did talk about like my life stuff, like, you know, having crushes or, you know, getting my little heart broken or something like that. And I didn't want my parents to find it. So I learned how to write in metaphors, and I just taught myself just in case. It never happened, but
okay.
But yeah, so.
So you kind of went cryptic on it for a little bit. Yeah. You're journaling.
Yeah, but in this case, I didn't feel the need to. I was just literally writing from the heart, and it was in the form that I just was always been used to.
Okay.
And I just felt better writing like that.
Nice. So tell me, so you did had your first performance with the book last Thursday. Was it a couple of Thursdays ago? It was in January.
The 23rd,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And it was, so tell me, how did the wine bar, I think it was Anson? Atchison's wine.
Shout out to Atchison.
How did they get involved with you and their performance?
Actually, my very first reading was my book release at Luna's Cafe
with Ike Torres.
Yes, I saw that. But my first private reading was at Atchison Wine Company. And that was literally happenstance. It was literally like being at the right place at the right time. I live on the opposite side of town, and I had a dentist appointment coming up that day. And so I was picking up a prescription to help calm my nerves because I'm like super anxiety about it. That's a whole other story. I was waiting, and I was walking. I don't live that far, but I walking distance, you know. So I was just walking in the opposite way, waiting. And it's like, oh, I've never been in this side of town before. And, and I was walking by, and it's just a little spot. And it was, you know, pretty inside and a little shiny. And I'm like a cat, so I'm like, ooh, shiny things, you know. And the manager, Dan, he saw me kind of like stopping, going in front of the place. And he's like, hey, come on in. You like wine? Come on in. I do like a good glass of wine, you know. So I stopped in and we chatted, and he was telling me about the place. And I was sitting there, and I got a notification on my phone to check my email. And it said, Google your book. And I'm like, okay. So I Googled my book, and as far as I knew, I was going to be, my book was going to be selling online on Amazon. And so when I Googled my book, all of a sudden it was like Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Target, Walmart, eBay. It was even selling in Germany and Finland. And then I'm like, whoa, I let out a little shriek, you know? He's like, what's wrong? I'm like, no, nothing. And so I told him, and right when I told him, some patrons walked in, and he was talking about it, and he was talking about it with them. And then the owner walked in, Steve, and He's like, hey, we got an author in the house. And he's like, no way. And so we started talking about it again. And the fact that it was poetry and that I had done the book launch at the Cat at Luna's Cafe. And Steve's like, well, I mean, how would you feel about doing a reading here? Really? Let's catch, you know. He's like, no catch, you know, whatever you need from us. And I'm just thinking, like, this is too good to be true. Like, yes, of course. And it just went from there. And I did the show. And that was actually going to be my deciding factor of whether or not I was going to pursue that avenue. Because in my mind, I was just only going to do the poetry circuit around Sacramento, you know, the actual poetry scene where poets go and avid poet readers and lovers, you know?
Okay.
So depending on how the show went, it was going to decide whether or not I wanted to pursue that as well, doing private readings. And it went really well. And the feedback was more than I expected. And then on top of that, they asked me to come back.
Yes, you do have an encore coming.
Yeah.
Was it Saturday?
Yeah, this Saturday at 6. So that was a huge boost too, but it just never dawned on me because, like I said, this whole thing is a new world for me. Not poetry, but just reading my poetry.
Why?
Well, obviously, I've been on stage before, but not in the poetry scene. I haven't done any of my personal writing to the public. So writing the book, it's like, you know, I didn't want to just sit on my hands and just have a book out there and not do anything. So it never dawned on me that that this was a possibility that I could branch out and do private readings. Ultimately, I wanted, you know, do a book tour. But after this experience, I'm like, I can do my own book tour.
Yeah.
You know? And so it kind of opened up this whole new world in my head. You know, it was like a light bulb went off. Like, why didn't I think of that before? So yeah, it just gave me a whole nother avenue to pursue and think outside of the box, and even branched more ideas. And that's why I said earlier that the theater world and the poetry world are starting to intertwine. And you were there that Thursday, and I had added like an element of music in the background.
I stood there in the driveway and looked up at the barren landscape. Watched the sun go down in fiery red flames. The heat charred the sky that the moon illuminated. Once the smoke dissipated, no stars remained in the black space. I waited alone, looking down an empty road, waiting for you to come home. I sat down, legs crossed. I watched the tears turn to streams, only to end up in the gutter of the street. I thought I was breathing until I heard my own screams. I laid on the gravel ground, stared up at the moon, illuminating the gloom.
And it just... I in theater, I wasn't only acting, but I was also, and we're in the area where I worked for like 14 years. So another shout out to Manuel Pickett, because he's a director here and he taught me everything that I know about theater, including he taught me how to do the lighting and music board. So, you know, just my mind started going like, what else can I do? You know, it's not about I need anything to help my poetry, right. But I'm a Gemini Cancer. I'm a cuss baby and I get bored really easily.
Nice.
So I'm constantly like, it's not just for the audience, like to see something new, but it's for me too. Really? So my mind's thinking like, you know, let me secure a spot and add like a little visual and a little music to it. Nothing grandiose, but even just a little bit just helps to accentuate the energy of the work.
Okay. Did you do the same thing when you were over, when your first book release over at Luna's? Did you do the same thing or no?
No, I, well, Luna's is a little more of a controlled environment.
Yeah, contained.
So I just wanted to go with the flow, you know, and see. I'd gone to Luna's a couple of times previously to hear other poets read. And then Ike told me about it, which is funny. I've known Ike for a long time.
Really?
We acted together. We worked together. Oh, okay. And when I came out finally about the book, he's like, I had no idea you were a poet. And I said, I had no idea you were a poet. And so he's like, well, would you like to be a feature, you know, and do your book launch at Luna's? And he told me about it. And I'm like, yeah. So I wanted to go and just see what it was like before I actually did it. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was great. Yeah. I mean, I loved it. And so I was like, when it was my turn to get up on stage, I was like super, you know, hyped about it and nervous. And I didn't really know what to expect, but everything was set up. You know, they have microphones, they have speakers, they have, you know, stand for you, they have chairs, whatever you need. They've got it. Doing private readings, you don't have that. They're not, most places that aren't going to be equipped. So it was like, I didn't even think about it. You know, I was like, oh my God. I was like, like, I'm going to need an amp. I'm going to need a mic. I'm going to need a stand. I'm going to need this and that. But I loved the, I loved the fact that I had the ability to have my hands on every single part of what I was doing. Cause I'm really hands-on like that when it comes to any of my creative projects. Like I love to just be a part of all of it. So that's why with the book, you know, I almost did everything. The editing, and I had someone else edit, you know, look over it too. But you know, the cover was my vision, the author's page, the details was, you know, to a T. I was just envisioning what I wanted it to look like. How I wanted it to flow and just all of it. I just wanted to make sure that it was, I could stand by every part of it from beginning to end.
So what does the cover name come from?
That's interesting. You know, like I said earlier, sometimes I have this, stream of consciousness moment or an automatic writing thing where an idea just pops in my head. So at the time I was trying to figure out what I wanted to call the book, and every day, you know, something would pop in my head and I'd write it down on sticky notes. And one day I was sitting at work and I don't know what I was doing. Hopefully working.
Hopefully.
My boss has listened to this. I was working. I promise. But it just popped into my head. My nickname in like high school, college was Blue Butterfly. Yeah. And I have a South American blue butterfly tattooed on my back.
Nice.
And so I knew at some point Blue Butterfly was going to be it. It didn't feel like enough, and it just popped in my head, beautifully broken blue butterfly, and I wrote it down, and I just kind of, like, pushed it away, and I kept looking at it, and I'm like, well, it kind of has a ring to it. Kind of like how that sounds. I kind of like how that looks. I'll sleep on it, you know? I got to sleep on stuff. So the next day, I text my grandfather, because he was the first person I told about the book, and he actually helped me create the cover.
Nice.
He did the graphics. I'm so proud of him. He worked his butt off.
Nice.
For this, for me. But I told him, I texted him and my grandma, and I said, I think this is it. I'm going to go with it. And they texted me back. They're like, love it. And there was no rhyme or reason. I already knew that I wanted Blue Butterfly in it.
Right.
But the beautifully broken, I said it in a few ways in my head, but I just left it alone without any like punctuations, because it was like, initially it was like beautifully broken. Blue Butterfly, like, you broke pretty beautifully there, you know. or it's just beautifully broken Blue Butterfly. You're just a beautifully broken Blue Butterfly. So in my head, you know, it reads different ways, but I just, I left it written the way that it is. Just, you can say it how you want to say it.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
And I added the hashtag, you know, BBBBB, four Bs. I hope that was four Bs.
If not, we'll count out later.
BBBB.
I'll add another B.
But that's why I added the hashtag because, you know, it's just, it is a mouthful, but it's a beautiful mouthful. So. I like the way it sounds.
So speaking of the hashtags and stuff, mm-hmm. how has the promoting been? I mean, because now you have an item or a gift to the world. Now you got to like go, oh, crazy. I got to give this gift out to the world.
Yeah, I got
to
get it out. Right. it's been slow going. It's very organic the way that it's happening. Again, I learned so much in doing theater from Manuel Pickett because he promoted organically. I remember we used to go out literally and walk Midtown, Second Saturdays, downtown, and promote our shows to individuals and stores and restaurants and, you know, and he built this beautiful following that's grown, you know, to this day. And so I learned a lot from that and also with social media. So I've kind of been following that route to see what works and what doesn't work. So initially when the book launched, I had the idea, we're kind of in an era where everyone loves to post picturesque quotes,
right.
You know, and so I had the idea to turn pieces from my work into picturesque quotes as well that people could repost or just something pretty to look at, and it's my words and it's promoting my book as well. So I spent a lot of time on that, and I'm really happy with the way that it turned out, but you know, getting it out to the masses, getting it out to the world is that's the part that I'm still kind of figuring out. I have better luck doing it the organic way, you know, person by person.
Oh, okay.
Meeting people, word of mouth. And, you know, I've been lucky enough that people who've read the book and really love it pass it on, and their sister ends up buying it, or, you know, and then their friend ends up buying it, and it's just kind of trickled like that. So right now I'm working with that, and then kind of building upon my own knowledge and researching how to expand on that and grow it. But for right now, that's my marketing strategy.
Hey, it still works in this day and age.
Yeah.
Interpersonal interaction goes way as far as than you think, than just putting a post up online. It's funny how that interaction can change a person's mood or a feel and how much they want to be involved. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you put something on post, people actually have to want to see it or go, oh, okay. And then it's either in their attention span to do it, or they're just going, okay, up.
Yeah.
Just moving back up. Next thing. Ooh, exactly. Food. Kid food. All right. I need some of that.
Cat meme.
Cat meme.
I love cat memes.
Nice catty. So,
but that's exactly it. And that's, you know, when they're directly in you know, your face and you can talk about it and they're like, oh, I didn't even realize it was that deep, or oh, I didn't realize it was actually about that. Because people get just, when on social media, you just kind of get a quick perception of what you think it probably is about, rather than, you know, that's why I think it's so important also to do these readings, because people have a chance to come and see it and actually hear it. Because people buy the book and not necessarily read it, you know, maybe skim through it and still have a perception about what they think that it's about. And I think hearing it from me, it just, changes that idea, and I'll just read it, you know. I think I'm gonna get it, you know. And I've sold a lot of books like that. meeting people and just having conversations and connecting with people, because I really feel like it's a universal theme. Just like they say, you know, math is a universal language. Love is a universal language. Grief is a universal language. Pain and hope. So these are things that cross all lines, all boundaries, all religions, all orientations, sexual orientations, ages, you know. It doesn't matter your background. So I found that I've connected with so many different types of people talking about this book. And I've sold a lot like that. And it was really, it gave me a lot of hope that what I'm doing is right and that I'm on the right path, you know, because it's hard not to get in your own head. Like, I have this book. Now what? You know? Like, people might buy it and people might not, you know? I could try this and it might work and it might not. And it's just so easy to get wrapped up and tangled in your own negative thoughts. And right. So I've been working really hard to untangle that. And the more that I untangle it, the more positive things have been happening. So it's all like a mental mind state in my eyes as far as gaining success, the type of success that you want. I think that you have to have a positive intention, like a direct intention of what type of success you want, publishing a book, and what success means to you. You know, it means something different for everybody.
Right. Book publishers here, even though they get a book made and it's a big endeavor, a lot of them mostly tell the poet, the poet and stuff, that, you know, there's only so many books that are going to be sold. Don't expect anything over 40 or anything over 20. You know, it's just they already have in their mind that poetry doesn't sell as hard as this novel or, you know, Harry Potter book. And so don't expect too much, whereas
don't put too much work into it.
Well, not just don't put too much work into it. Don't expect it to it'll have ebb and flows. But expect those those flows and stuff not to be so high, like, oh yeah, I sold three today, or I sold one, or which is, I always thought that's kind of interesting, whereas other books and novels, you know, they just tell the story of what the book's about, and then, or give a little synopsis, and then there it goes. It just goes off on its own. Whereas poetry, since everything is, sometimes the theme is not all the same, people can't get the point of, okay, well, they're all their own individual stories. So it's how can I get into something that's not doesn't have like an ongoing
theme?
There's
no theme, yeah. Yes. And that's the beauty of poetry. There's no theme, you know, it's all different. It's just, and that's what I love about it, because like I said, I get bored easily. So I don't want to I don't want to do the same thing. I don't want to read the same thing. So, and that was another reason, outside of Edgar Allan Poe, I fell in love with anthologies. Because the poetry, you know, was from different people and they're just different. But I was kind of into the darker side of anthologies. So it was like love and tragedy and pain and heartache. And I was a kid. I don't know nothing about that. I hadn't experienced any of that stuff. But in a weird way, I felt like it resonated, because it was like eventually going to prepare me for what I was going to go through as an adult. So it all makes sense to me now. But like you were saying, as far as like poetry and not selling, and I'm going to bring this up because it's kind of a touchy subject for people, I found. But Rupi Kaur, she, the poet for Milk and Honey.
Okay, yeah, I got it. Yeah,
she did something very interesting with her work. And you know, there's... everyone has different opinions about her writing, and is it poetry or is it not poetry? Aside from all of that, it is classified as poetry.
Right.
And it opened the doors, like she crossed over into the mainstream.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I never heard of her when her book came out, it wasn't until after my book came out when I heard about her. And it was interesting because I never believed in that whole, you know, poetry can't do anything, but it does get in your head because I've heard it, you know. Right. But what she did was kind of open that door. And regardless of what people think about her work, it did make me feel like the possibilities were endless, you know. And that's why doing private readings and doing my own book tour is even more important to me, because that night at Atchison on Thursday, the main feedback that I got was that I've never been to a poetry reading before. I've never read poetry, or poetry was never on my radar. I never really thought about it. And a lot of those same people are coming back on Saturday and bringing others, you know. So the crowd that is coming are more so unfamiliar with poetry than those that are not. And I love that. To bring those two worlds together, people who love poetry are writers and familiar with it, and then those who are not, you know. So, because poetry for me isn't just for like a select few,
right?
You know, it's for anybody. And I think that's why we write for ourselves first, but we also think about the collective once it's over too, to share it with everyone. So that's my, you know, ultimate goal. And seeing what Ruby did, it changed kind of my mindset about the old way of thinking, like poetry won't sell, you know, like expect this much. And it, like you said, and then, you know, maybe work on a new book.
which I hear a lot of. I mean, it is, does come down sometimes to people saying, well, write the next one. You know, here's one. Right, let's see if the next one goes better and stuff. So it's always think it's funny when I know of published poets, which one of them, Stuart, the president of Sacramento Poetry, he had his fifth book out. And when he told me, yeah, I have five, I lost my mind. I was like, you have five books out? Man, you're a poet, published poet. Wait, I'm like giving him praises. He's like, took some time. I got it. Yeah. Next book. It just didn't jar on me. the whole thought of, you just don't see this as an accomplishment? Yeah. I was accomplished. I see it, but you know. Five books. Someone's gonna like it.
It's a huge accomplishment. Yeah. One is a huge accomplishment. But I find myself even doing that when people are like, oh my God, book, it's so cool. And I was like, you know, like,
get all giddy.
I think that's like, I mainly have that reaction because it still seems very surreal. And my job out of everyone, when they found out, one of my coworkers, she's our main admin there, and she just like, oh my God, I've never met an author before. This is so cool. She told everybody. Next thing I know, the company had said that they wanted to buy a bulk of my books and give them out to the company. And so they blasted me in their newsletters. I mean, everyone was really excited, and I felt like more excited than me, you know, because I'm just like, let me catch my breath for a second, because I still like, I seem like I'm looking at my book right now in front of me, and it's still like, has to compute. I have like a 10-second delay or something that, you know, it's my book.
This is your
right? Baby.
Yeah.
It literally is my child, and I'm watching it grow before my eyes, and it's a really beautiful thing. So I do feel like the organic thing is working for me, and I do feel like the possibilities are endless. And not long ago, I got a message on Facebook that there's a group of women in the UK, and they have like a book club, and they bought my book.
What?
Yeah. And then I got one from South America and South Africa, and I'm just like, wow, like there's someone that has my book in South Africa, you know, like, so it's just really giving me hope, because it's easy to get discouraged when you don't see the traction that you you would like to, and you get stuck. Like, oh, where do I go next? Like, what do I do? Like, do I get one of those planes, you know, that flies the banner? Okay. You know, like, what that. Do I do? I'm not going to do that, but
you never know.
But like, again, like, it's hard not to get lost in your own head of more negative than positive. And I have to stop myself and remember those things that have happened, and remember that it's happening because, like, the universe telling me you're on the right track, you're going the right way, keep doing it, you know, and you'll figure it out along the way. And I've met a lot of people in the poetry community who, you know, have inspired me, like, they just are going and all over the place, and, you know, people, you know their work, and it's just a really beautiful thing to see, you know. So it's exciting when I see it and the interactions afterwards, and it's just like, ooh, you know, like a kid. I'm like, I want to do that. You know?
Nice. So, being that you've basically been, you worked in the where the Wilkinson Theater and the complex is, and you've seen Sacramento poetry over here, but you've never been inside.
No, I know.
What I've been was that in
every,
about?
I've been in every building except for this one. I didn't know what it was. And, you know, we never asked. Isaac knew, but he never said anything. I was, you know, usually a show had just ended and I'd be like tired and, you know, I would see people going in or coming out and I would wonder, I'm like, oh, I wonder what kind of show they're doing. I thought they're all theater spaces. Mm. So I had no idea that SPC stood for Sacramento Poetry Center. I thought it was just an acronym for another theater company, which is why, I mean, not that I didn't care, but I hadn't heard of any shows being performed there, and we hadn't rehearsed, so I just thought it was like a private space.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I found out, and I was like, I found out where the show for MLK Day was, and I Googled it, I had mapped it, and I saw the pictures, and I said, kidding me. I'm not going to curse, but I'm like, you got to be bleeping kidding me. 14 years. I never knew.
Yeah, you did do the MLK Day show. Yeah. And so was that your first time performing here in Sacramento? Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think about it?
It was great. I had a full house and everyone showed a lot of love. You know, I felt really welcomed. And everyone did a great job. And again, it was just like, you know, sitting there like, ooh, everyone's so, like, they know each other, you guys. Right. And personally, so, you know, someone would be saying something like, oh, you know what I mean? They're like, yeah, so-and-so, you know, it was just this like community vibe that I love. So I enjoyed it. And I hadn't written anything like new like that, so I wrote a piece just for that, you know, two pieces just for that night. I have been working on my second book, but I haven't, like, you know, gone outside of that.
Are you starting off the next child, huh?
It's brewing.
I do know you are doing the fifth Monday next month for March, for the Black Lives Matter.
Yes.
And so I'll be the one of the hosts there, but she, so Joanna will be one of the features and doing her. So will some of the new poems be into that in there or no?
From the second book that I'm working on?
Yeah,
But I'm planning on writing something.
Okay.
For that, but I also think I'm going to read a few from my book as well.
Well, yeah. Promote.
Yeah. I didn't think of doing it last time because I thought it was just like specific, you know. So, but this time I will.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Hopefully, it won't be my last time.
Speaking of which, so in the poetry community, they do have a thing. They do have a divide between the literary poets and the stage poets. Mm-hmm. And they call it Page versus stage. Which one do you feel more comfortable in? Do you feel comfortable on the page or the stage or both?
Both, and I'll tell you why. Okay. I think of myself as like an extreme version of both an introvert and an extrovert. And I can be a complete hermit. And people who know me know this about me. I will disappear off the face of the earth. And I'm go into my cave and cultivate ideas, you know. And so that's where I'm more comfortable, like with the page, you know, just me and that's it. And the extrovert part of me loves the human interaction of energy when reading and performing. So it's both for me, because those two dynamics that I feel are pretty balanced within me can do both and like both and love both. So it's not one or the other.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like I maybe winter more the page, like the hibernation. And then spring starts coming and I'm more like, yeah.
Let's do this.
All over the world.
Touche. But why don't you let the people, since we're coming to an end, why don't you let the people know some of your social medias and where they can find your work at?
To get my little cheat sheet.
Oh, she has a cheat sheet.
So I'm working on the website right now, like a website outside of Facebook. Mm. But I do have a Facebook like fan page type deal.
Love fan pages.
And that one you can find me at Sojourna Poetry. So it's facebook.com/SojournaPoetry. Okay. And then Facebook and Instagram, you can just find me at Sojourna Jennings, and that's SojournaJennings.
It's like Jello but better. any other spots? Instagram, Facebook, Twitter?
Right now.
I know you have a Twitter one. I found it.
I don't.
You're so, yes, you do. You have social Jennings. I have found you. You have a Twitter.
Well, that's news to me. I've never signed
it
up.
Says, thank you for, yeah, it basically points out things. When I Googled you, it came up. It's like, oh, you have a Twitter.
No way.
It's like So Jennings.
I don't think that's me.
I think it was, but it's like, thank you for the book. And I'm like, okay, well, let's talk about the book.
I'm going to have to check that out. Somebody might be.
I'll show you out the page.
I don't ever remember signing up for Twitter, so I don't know who that is.
But you're on it, so just let everyone know. So Jonah will be having a show. She is having her encore performance on Saturday, February 8th, over at Atchison's Wine once again. And then she's also going to be doing... next month on March, the fifth Monday, over here at Sacramento Poetry, she will be performing for the Black Lives Matter with a couple other poets also here. Plus, I'll be the host. I'll be one of the hosts here doing the show with my other co-hosts, Lynn Germanara and also Frank Graham. And we will... get all together to basically help promote and also get a fundraiser for the Black Lives Matter movement. So, yeah, keep it locked here. And so, Jonah, thank you for coming out and doing we have a pleasure of hearing you and your book of Beautifully Broken Blue Butterflies. People, get that book, Beautifully Broken Butterflies, Blue Butterflies, on Amazon. As you heard it, she has it over at Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, Target. Yes, I saw it in Target. Come on, people. This ain't even the Walmart. I mean, you have no other choice of saying you can't get this book. You can get this book. It is in stores.
And eBay.
Oh, my goodness. It is flying, people. Come on. You got to grab your copy. Grab your copy so Jonah can smile as much as she does right here. I know y'all can't see it, but I do.
They're imagining it.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
I am.
I'll basically put, I'll leave the information, the link to her book and everything else. Okay. And I'd like to say thank you to Sojourner for joining us, and hope y'all be chill.
Bye.
As the episode comes to a close, please go to linktree.com/iambictheme. That's linktr.ee/iambiczine. Please send any emails that you may have to iambiczine@gmail.com. Music by Mr. Resolution. Recorded and show has been recorded and edited by A Serious Productions. And we'll see you at the next show. Bye.